What do I have to do? Okay. Hi. I'm Yvonne Wasilewski. I'm from Duke University. I'm a research scientist there in the Center for Child and Family Policy. And I'm also a health behavior and health education research scientist with an appointment at the School of Public Health at UNC. This study is actually a follow-up to a project that was done 2 years ago to assess the feasibility of training shelter staff to screen and refer children residing in domestic violence shelters to appropriate services, screening them for mental health problems. And what I'm going to be talking about mostly today is actually, was the project sustained or not? And we'll just go with it. And I want to let people know that this was a collaborative effort between the Center for Child and Family Health at Duke University, which does real hands-on work with people who have been traumatized by domestic violence, and also the Center for Child and Family Policy, and our 6 domestic violence shelters in North Carolina. They were in actually 6 different counties, and we chose them because they had high rates of poverty, high rates of domestic violence, and they represented urban and rural areas of the state, as well as the fact that they really wanted to be in the project. And it was funded by the Duke Endowment and the Z. Smith Reynolds Foundation. So why domestic violence shelters? Why do we choose this? Well, I don't know about in your state, but in our state, 8,000 children are sheltered yearly in North Carolina. And these kids, because they have witnessed violence and are in these situations for a very long period of time, are at the highest risk for mental health problems. And in fact, we know that witnessing domestic violence causes separation anxiety disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, phobias, PTSD, ADHD, sexualized behavior, and complex trauma. Yet, with respect to domestic violence shelters, nobody really focuses on the children. If anybody's worked with people or staff at domestic violence shelters, you know the focus is on the mother. Nothing wrong with that. But this whole idea that if you work with the mother and it trickles down to the children, that doesn't really work. So what we tried to do was something different. We tried to empower staff at the shelters to identify the mental health needs of the children. And by the way, this is the first project in the nation of its kind to do this. So what we did was we trained these folks, I'm just going to be a minute on this, on how to use these particular screening instruments, some of which you may have heard of, the Strengths and Difficulties Questionnaire, the UCLA Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Index, and a parent evaluation of a developmental, the PEDS. And the reason we chose these three is because we and then could work with kids from 0 to 18. These are the findings. We were able to train the staff to assess 40% of the children on any one of the three measures. 45% of those screened scored clinically significantly or at risk on any one of the at least these three measures, and 47% of them were referred for follow-up. So our findings were confirmed. These things are really happening with these kids. And not only that, but the staff were able to identify these problems and refer. And we also made some behavioral changes too. Awareness of the long-term effects of witnessing domestic violence increased in shelter staff, talking with children about trauma, coaching of parents, that was a big one, and referral to the local mental health entity and the CDSAs, Children's Developmental Service Administrators, and also self-efficacy to screen, score, and appropriately refer. So, because we were successful in training the staff to do these things, and the Duke Endowment and Z. Smith Reynolds said, okay, we'll give you another year worth of funding. We're not going to give you a lot of money, but we want to know, okay, is this going to keep going? Are these folks going to do this when you pull out and they're on their own? So we applied for and received funding to do the sustainability or the follow-up study. We basically and loosely, you know, referred to Russell Glasgow's REAM framework when we were developing the follow-up study. I'm not really going to go into these different things if you want to. For those of you who aren't familiar with REAM, type in REAM, Google it, and you'll find out all about, you know, what needs to go into developing, implementing, evaluating, and disseminating a really good health promotion program. But I want to focus this on maintenance, the last element of REAIN that's used to evaluate health programs. And basically, what we tried to do was figure out whether the activities that we trained the staff to do were maintained both at the individual level and also at the site level. I think I'm going to skip some of this. We looked to look at the individual level. All we did was we did a pretest, a post-test, and then again at 6 months, or I guess a year and a half later, we did the follow-up on the individual level to see if the individual level findings were sustained. Originally, we had 30 staff that were in the study. By the time of the follow-up study, we only had 19 shelter staff remaining. This is because there's high staff turnover in these shelters, and but the people who came back, actually 19 out of 30 isn't too bad, in my opinion, in my humble opinion. So anyway, to do the analysis from pre to post to follow up, we used ANOVA and SAS, and basically we found that the things that were sustained at the individual level were the coaching of parents, and this makes sense because again, the shelter mission is to work with parents. So if you're going to coach parents on how to interact with your children and help them to engage in behavioral management strategies with children that improve their behavior, it's going to work because this is what shelter staff do. And also shelter staff in self-confidence to screen, score, and appropriately refer using the SDQ and the PDSI. What was not sustained was talking to children about trauma and the referrals, at least from the self-report point of view, to the local mental health entity and the CDSAs, nor awareness of the long-term effects of DV on children. We think some of this might be because of the fact that the number of people who were interviewed at follow-up was lower, and maybe that affected the power. Okay. Let me just focus on the shelter level maintenance, because this is something that I think most people don't do. Most people aren't even getting money to do follow-up studies these days. And it's really important because if you have a program and you see during a pilot that it works, you want to see, well, is it going to be institutionalized? How can you sustain it? And how do you measure sustainability? So our question was at the shelter level, was screening and referral integrated into the structure and the functioning of the shelter? And if so, was it modified over time, and how was it modified? And what were some of the barriers to sustainability, and how did the shelter staff address them? Okay, so I had to search around and try to figure out how to measure sustainability, and I found a person in the organizational research field named Pluye. And she has and her colleagues have a model of program sustainability. And basically what they believe is that it's the presence of routinized activities that promote sustainability, and that these activities have four characteristics: memory, adaptation, values, and rules. Memory is basically the shelter's human, material, and financial resources that are in place. Adaptation are the routine activities at the shelter modified to accommodate screening and referral. Values are the screening, is whether screening and referral is positively and collectively valued at the shelter. And rules are the written procedures governing decision making and action that account for the way things are done at the shelter. Okay, so we developed our own sustainability scale, adapting, our measures from Pluye's model. And we rated each shelter on each of six dimensions of sustainability, four drawn from her model and two which were added. We added community, partnerships, and technology. And basically we asked the staff, how much are these things like your shelter or not? Not at all, a little, somewhat, or a lot. And these were Likert scale questions, obviously. And so we tested each dimension for internal consistency using Cronbach's alpha, and we created a dimensional and total score for each shelter. We analyzed this data using SAS, and this is what we found. Okay, let me go back for a second. Okay, so we looked at memory, and these are some of the items with respect to memory. The budget: is there a budget for screening and referral? Is there a permanent position for screening and referral? More than one person trained to do screening and referral? Interpreter, et cetera. And this is what we found. Okay, basically what we found is that four of the six shelters had mean memory scores above 2, which indicated that there was a fairly high degree of resources committed to screening and referral. And two of the key training objectives, cross-training of multiple staff and a supervisor assigned to oversee administrative responsibilities, were reported by four of the six shelters. Adaptation, these are some of the items for adaptation. Were there intake procedures in place that allowed people to do screening and referral? Client records, annual reports, staff schedule, staff comfort level, reduced time to screen children. And what we found was that shelters consistently scored lower on the degree to which routines were modified to integrate screening and referral into daily activities. Only one shelter, the Halifax shelter, scored above 2, indicating that they had, you know, really integrated this thing into their shelter. And the only measure that was reported, or the one that was reported most by the shelters, was client record keeping to document screening and referral. Okay. We define value as the degree to which screening and referral was positively and collectively valued at the shelter. And the items were: the shelter director supports the screening tools, we have incentives to encourage screening referral, we continue to implement screening in spite of cost and in terms of time and effort, and our relationships with other agencies have been enhanced as a result. Okay, if you look at figure 3, you can see that four of the six shelters had a mean value score above 2, indicating a fairly high collective value placed on screening and referral. And in particular, staff across four of the six shelters reported high degrees of shelter director support to use screening tools and staff commitment. Okay, the rules. We looked mostly at rules in terms of the toolkit that we provided to shelters. And the toolkit was viewed by the staff, used to train new shelter staff, used as a reference, etc. And we actually found that there wasn't that much going on with respect to use of the toolkit, which we were kind of disappointed in. We looked at the degree to which community partnerships were maintained, and we found actually that community partnerships at the institutional level were maintained. And we also looked at technology, the degree to which there were PCs available in case that shelter training would take place on computers, and those scores were really high. However, when we looked at the overall sustainability of the project, we found that the mean sustainability score was 1.69, which means that sustainability at these shelters was only partially maintained. You can see that in a couple of the shelters, Halifax and Robeson, though, they did a better job than the others. Okay. So these are the things that were highly maintained: allocation of staff and financial resources. Whatever they had that was extra, they did put into this because they became committed to it. The collective value placed on screening, community partnerships, and internet capability. Activities poorly maintained, routines and procedures to adopt screening, intake procedures, client records, and a staff schedule, a written protocol on how screening should take place, inclusion in the annual report, and consistent use of the toolkit. So it was a mixed bag in terms of what was maintained and what was not. But the good news is that you could actually document this, and you could see where there were strengths in terms of what the shelter staff and the institution was able to adapt and adopt for itself, and where there were weaknesses and where you could go in order to improve the possibility and the likelihood of sustaining screening. These are some of the barriers that we identified through focus groups afterwards. Basically, an overall limitation in financial and other resources, frequent, recurring, and unpredictable admissions, focus on urgent needs of adult shelter residents, and high staff turnover. The factors that promoted sustainability and do continue to promote sustainability are fit with the shelter mission now, because people know exactly how, in fact, screening and referral can really help children as well as parents, commitment by shelter staff, and integration of screening across multiple activities. These are the recommendations that came out of this study. This was not really a study. This was an evaluation, and these recommendations went to the Duke Endowment and also went to the state. What we need to do before we can continue, or what we need to do to continue these efforts, is to enhance the overall sustainability of a stability of the state's domestic violence shelters and agencies. And to do that, that means money. We need to put some money into these into shelters. I mean, it's ridiculous. These folks spend more time just trying to piece together a budget yearly, just to keep people on board. There's hardly room. There's hardly any money for anything else. So that's an important thing. We do have to support the implementation of evidence-based children's programming in domestic violence shelters, and funding agencies should do that. We should provide ongoing accessible training in child development and behavior management techniques to all domestic violence shelters, enhance and strengthen partnerships between domestic violence programs and agencies responsible for early intervention services for children, and integrate these findings with policy established by the State Division of Social Services, including training initiatives and funds administered by the division, such as TANF and Family Violence Prevention Funds. Thank you. This is my project team, and these are the references. And a full copy of the report, if you Google the Center for Child and Family Policy, can be found at the Center for Child and Family Policy. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next presenter is Andrea Gielen with Safety, Behavior Patterns, and Abuse Experience of Low-Income Urban Women.